Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Today, we record part three of our conversation with university student Damien Schott. He's also a research analyst at the Bitcoin Layer. He's learning about Bitcoin with the rest of you guys. Damien, what's your next question?
Well, I'm curious about Bitcoin's hard cap at 21 million coins that will ever exist, especially with somewhere along the lines of 4 million coins lost. Is this realistically enough supply for global use? Will this limit Bitcoin because it only serves a subset of the population? Will we need other cryptocurrencies? That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, so this goes back to your inflationary versus deflationary dynamic. I think a lot of the hesitation around Bitcoin is that it's too scarce to power the world. But that is assuming that Bitcoin is going to be the only currency. And I just don't believe that that's going to be the case, because there is a human desire for credit. And if there's a desire for credit to borrow and to invest in the future, and if there's no way for our, I don't envision our society giving up credit, extensible credit that can be issued beyond what we currently have access to. So in a Bitcoin world, let's say Bitcoin was the only currency, no more gold, no more government currencies, no more banking deposits that are denominated in anything other than Bitcoin. So if you have Bitcoin and you keep it at a bank, your bank deposit is Bitcoin denominated. Okay. And then let's say you, Damien, are a young person, you've secured a job and now you're ready to buy a home. You want to borrow money to buy a home. You have 20% down. You want to borrow 80%. If you take 20% to the bank and you're like, I'm ready to borrow 80%, will you finance my house purchase? Will you finance this mortgage? The bank says, okay, Damien, let me see your pay stubs. Okay, you have a good job. It's paying well. It's paying enough to cover the mortgage. I'll issue the loan. That 80%, let's pretend it's 800 grand worth of, let's say it's 8 Bitcoin. Let's say you have 2 Bitcoin and you want to borrow 8 Bitcoin to buy a house that's 10 Bitcoin, okay? And the bank says yes. Where does that 8 Bitcoin come from? And remember, in this example, we have no other currencies in the world. And Bitcoin is scarce, as we know, can't be created. So where does the 8 Bitcoin come from? If the bank says yes, and you get the loan.
It comes from other depositors.
Other depositors. It's someone else's money. That is absolutely correct. Now let's pretend it's today in the regular world. Dollars. You go to Citi and you're like, I got 200 grand. I want to buy this house for $1 million. Will you loan me 800 grand? Citi says yes. They look at your pay stubs. They say yes. They issue you a loan, 800 grand, it goes to escrow, and you have your house. Where did the 800 grand come from?
Same answer, from other depositors.
False. They created that money. It's a new loan. They have a new, their asset side of their balance sheet just grew by 800,000, new loan, and their liabilities grew by 800,000, which is, you know, a deposit that is now with whoever sold the house. That is brand new money that the bank created for you to buy that house. That is not existing money.
Okay.
It's brand new money. Now that loan, take it, let's just complicate it a tiny bit. That loan will get packaged into a mortgage-backed security, and it will get purchased by an investor. The investor that buys that mortgage-backed security, more likely than not, owned a treasury security. So like, let's say, you know, $10 million worth of a treasury note, sold that treasury note, $10 million, and picked up $10 million of mortgage-backed securities. So that is not technically new money. That's existing money. But the creation of the mortgage itself is not existing money, Damien. It's new money. And so that is how new money comes to be. So when people think that like the Fed prints money or the Treasury prints money when it borrows and spends, really banks print money when they lend money. Same thing if you lease a car or you buy a car and you finance that purchase, that's new money that's being created, that auto loan. Okay. So if Bitcoin is the backing for, or let's say Bitcoin is the only currency, for you to get that 8 Bitcoin to buy the house and pry it away from existing Bitcoin holders, you are going to pay them a very nice interest rate to do that. And if you pay them a nice enough interest rate, they will lend you the Bitcoin. So it's not like lending stops. It's just that lending would be a much higher price for lending in that scarce money sort of world. But that is not how I envision the future, that we're just going to only have Bitcoin and no credit. That's why I want you to understand deposits, because if I lend, you know, if the bank lends you money, let's say, forget the house, now forget the car. Let's just go back to small business loan, okay? Small business, you have an idea, the bank lends you money. That's 100 grand of new money that didn't exist before. Now you have 100 grand in what? Deposits, right? You have 100 grand in deposits. Those deposits, you can spend them. And you can hire someone, or you can pay someone with them. Those deposits are new credits. And when the bank issues you 100 grand of new credits, your friend who earned $100,000 salary looks at you and they're like, but you just, your bank just created that money for you and I spent all year earning this money. You've just diluted my earnings. And guess what, Damien? You did. Because you didn't, the bank did. When you demanded the loan, you got the bank to dilute your friend's salary. That's how the world works. That's how money works today. Deposits can just be created anytime a loan is issued and the balance sheets all grow. The bank's balance sheet grows and your personal balance sheet grows. Because you now have 100,000 in assets, right? Your deposit is your asset. But what do you also have? You have 100,000 in debt. You have 100,000 liability. But your balance sheet is bigger. Before, yesterday, it was zero, right? Now it's 100,000. And the bank's is 100,000 more. It's not like some depositor lent you that money. The bank created new money to lend you those funds for the small business. Bitcoin is hitting its stride with massive ETF inflows, large geopolitical changes, and the prospect of a United States strategic Bitcoin reserve. 2025 is shaping up to be a defining year for Bitcoin. And here's the real question that you guys need to be asking yourself. Are you prepared? And is your Bitcoin house in order? If you're not sure, you're in luck, because on December 10th, Unchained is hosting a free web event that is an essential session to prepare yourselves for what is ahead. You'll walk away with a clear plan for your end of year moves, smart strategies for bringing your family into Bitcoin, and the confidence of knowing that you are set up for the long haul. Join Unchained's General Counsel Jeff Vandrew and Adamant Capital founder Tor de Meester for an unbelievable session to get you guys positioned for the year end, all your tax strategies, retirement strategies, any question that you might have about Bitcoin planning. With a bull run gaining momentum, this is your window to prepare for what's ahead. Register at unchained.com/TBL for this free web event. So Bitcoin, yeah. So let me answer your question about scarcity, about Bitcoin. That's why Bitcoin's limited supply is not a hurdle to Bitcoin adoption. It's like if I told you that the mines in South Africa, the gold miners in South Africa have come back up from a mile down underneath the earth, and they said, it's gone. There's no more gold. Do all the women wearing gold jewelry around the world say, I don't think this is pretty anymore? Or do they probably say, I'm never selling my gold jewelry if they can't even find it anymore in the earth's crust, right? So Bitcoin is the alternative asset. It's not the currency to make the economy work. Now, it will interact with the economy in this savings and investment and consumption dance that you're talking about. And I want you to keep working on these questions as we go. We're going to keep doing this so that we get the answers that make us satisfied. Or we present the ultimate questions that won't be answered until 10, 20, 30 years from now as we go through with the Bitcoin story. So it must be thought of as the alternative asset, not as the currency system for the world. And remember, each Bitcoin has 100 million subunits. And second layer networks such as the Lightning Network give us the ability to spend even fractions of that. So there are ways to have enough units to grease any sort of Bitcoin denominated economic activity, but it shouldn't be the prerequisite for Bitcoin adoption.
Okay. Wow, it's such an unbelievable concept that I think it's still difficult for me to grasp that the banks are creating money. It seems like Bitcoin exists like to hold us back almost. I'm wondering now, because Bitcoin has exploded in value so quickly, more than any other asset on earth, probably. I'm wondering, is there going to be any type of like inequality stemming from the people that adopted Bitcoin early as this alternative asset when it wasn't worth very much versus now and what it's going to look like in the next 10 years?
I don't know if there's a lot of inequality. I wouldn't characterize it as inequality because the price is a path, right? So price is always path dependent. And what that means is that you won't get new participants in the market, meaning like I've seen over the last couple of weeks, mining rewards from 2010. So very, very long-term Bitcoin holders are coming in and cashing out here. So how did, let's say I saw one that was like maybe 1,000 Bitcoin. So 1,000 Bitcoin is almost $100 million today. Okay. That person that mined 1,000 Bitcoin in 2010 probably did so with a laptop over a few months, just like literally no cost. Right? Negligible on the electricity bill, not noticeable from maybe that individual was able to do regular work on his or her laptop at the same time as having the Bitcoin protocol open and earning 1,000 Bitcoin. So, but did that person just collecting $100 million after 14 years, did that create any inequality? I don't think so. I don't think that there's any real inequality. Bitcoin is only $1.5 trillion in size, 1.75 trillion. The rest of the world's financial assets and physical assets are somewhere between 400 trillion and maybe $1.25 quadrillion. So there's no, the inequality in the world already exists. Bitcoin isn't going to make it worse. It probably will make it better, because it will bring people into an ultra wealthy class that probably would never have had access to that type of money. So bringing up families or countries from around the world. So I think Bitcoin will reduce inequality. It's so democratized also, Damien. It's so accessible by all. And so if you look at the way that certain African, Latin American, and Southeast Asian nations are adopting Bitcoin at a grassroots level, that's wealth being generated by people that have never had access to that type of financial technology before, or you know, powerful returning asset.
That does seem powerful. If now more and more people will have access just through internet connection, access to a hard currency. But then what I'm wondering is people who really need that, people who live in inflationary environments, who really need this type of currency, will Bitcoin's price stabilize more and more? Because a lot of people are afraid that it's going to have such wild price swings that when they need the money, they need to pull out the money, they need dollars for something, that it'll be at much lower for what they bought it for. Is it stabilizing and will it continue to stabilize in the future?
So Bitcoin's volatility is empirically coming down. It's just not very visible to the naked eye. You know, it just appears very volatile, but statistically it is coming down. I think that we already have our answer, Damien, in Nigeria, which is one of the, which has one of the highest adoption rates of digital currency anywhere in the world. Their currency regime is a mess. Their central bank went with a digital, central bank digital currency a couple years ago. They've had problems with massive amounts of inflation, government corruption. What are the people on the ground of Nigeria doing with digital currency? They're using Tether. They're using Tether. So the answer to your question is that people are using Tether when they need something stable. Hence the term stablecoin. Stablecoins are a big part of the future, but now we need to separate the US and the rest of the world, because the US doesn't have a problem with an unstable currency relative to the rest of the world. So it diminishes the likelihood of somebody going to Bitcoin because of an unstable currency. It's more of a political statement that I don't like this whole borrow and spend and banks create money by lending. That phenomenon drives people to Bitcoin because they know that their deposits are being devalued. The dollar is being devalued every day when the banks do this. The dollar is being devalued. We can see that in the price of gold and the price of real estate and the price of the stock market, right? And the price of Bitcoin, of course. But Bitcoin is more the last one to look at. We can look at the rest of it and just see the value of the dollar goes down as prices go up, right? So the dollar, the US people are not looking at that. But people, non-US people, are looking at, should I be owning the dollar, my currency, the dollar, or Bitcoin? And the answer, almost always for a stability purpose, is the dollar. So the on the ask any single person around the world, any of your friends who have family overseas, ask any of them. Does your family keep paper dollars in a safe in their house in a, and the answer is yes. Okay. So people are doing that with stable coins. There's no reason that they won't. The world is a very hectic currency situation where you have 100 currencies that are basically worthless, that are only in existence because of capital controls and mirages, honestly. Bitcoin is going to break down a lot of that with the assistance of Tether and other stable coins right beside it. Because now, if your family members overseas keep dollars in a vault as safety, but now people can just keep dollars in their stablecoin wallet and use them really easily. And there's like a parallel economy that accepts Tether, which there is in Nigeria. That is how the black market in Nigeria works, right? And we've had guests from Nigeria on the show multiple times and from other countries around the continent, Kenya and South Africa, so that we can understand, so that we're not pretending that they're adopting Bitcoin. Yes, some of them are buying Bitcoin. And yes, Bitcoin is very popular in Africa as this freedom tool, as this savings technology. But what is more popular on the ground in Nigeria, day-to-day economy? Tether. It's not. We don't have to speculate on it. So in different countries, there's different reasons that people are adopting Bitcoin or Tether, and we have to continue to appreciate the empirical evidence instead of trying to force our narratives on Bitcoin. Is Bitcoin going to replace the dollar and other currencies? The data that we have in front of our eyes does not suggest that at all. It suggests that Bitcoin is an alternative asset, that the dollar is probably going to eat other currencies and continue to, and that Bitcoin as the global currency is not where we're going because of the way that banks extend credit and the way that governments also borrow and spend. It's based off of a dollar system that really depends on bank balance sheet expansion.
Okay.
Damien, we've gone through a lot. I know you have a lot more questions. We're going to have to save them for next time. But this is very helpful to people. So these are the questions that people are asking. I get all of these questions from my students as well. This is how we learn, right? And when you keep asking me questions, it challenges us to come up with better and better answers. So I hope that we'll keep doing that.
This was excellent. My first class of the day, and I learned so much.
Excellent. Damien Schott, the Bitcoin Layer research analyst and university student. Thanks for joining us again at the Bitcoin Layer. We'll catch you guys next time.